Well, good morning, boys and girls. Hey, finally returned to work fishing, Frank. Getting me a bad habit. I think I just got to get younger. I think if I was younger, this would, all this stuff wouldn't be keep going on. But fishing, Frank, back here in the chair. We got Captain Morris in the chair across from me. And we're going to see about getting down to what's going on in the wide world of fishing. Yes, indeed, fishing. So, let's see, January 28th. And I think, come on, stop. You can't get, you know.
That's how those guitar players are. Yeah. They just won't shut up.
Yeah, I don't know what it is with these guitar player people. They just, you know, can't relax. So anyway, Captain Morris, you've been hitting the water pretty much every day. Have you been up inside the harbor?
I haven't been any further than Cape Hayes Point.
All right.
That's been as far as I've been in.
Now, I was reading the red tide reports from the U.S., Florida Fish and Wildlife, and they said there's some red tide up in Sarasota, some low concentrations and low to background in Charlotte County, and some low concentrations down in Lee County. You heard of, you seen any of it out there?
Yeah, last week, right before the front came through, we were fishing in the Gulf on the smaller boat. We were up just off of Palm Island Resort, 50 feet of water, and all our bait was dying in the live well. So there was red tide up in that area. And yeah, we moved maybe half a mile and caught more bait, and it never died, but we must have ran through a little concentrated patch of it up there. So there is some still floating around out there. After this hard cold front, I think that may have taken care of it, though.
Hopefully. Yeah, I know the one thing about red tide is it likes warm, salty water. So hopefully this is going to end it for a little while. But yeah, according to the studies, there's little bits of it here and there. Bringing it up because we get a lot of calls. Oh, I hear there's red tide. It's very small spots, very sporadic.
Very scattered.
You could be out there and running around even in an area that they say it's in, and you might not ever see it. Or you could be that unlucky guy, and every place you stop has red tide. You know, we're going to call that... do you feel lucky, fisherman?
That's right.
Are you a lucky boater or not?
So. Well, yeah, we were catching all those rare endangered gag groupers that same day on the dead squirrel fish that we had, and then when we caught live bait, you know, they actually ate that fine too. We probably threw back 10 or 12 of those rare, you know, gag groupers that are so highly endangered, and most of those we were catching, you know, snapper fishing. But
I think one of the big problems with this whole grouper and all these other regulations is they're taking a section from, it could be literally hundreds and hundreds of miles away from us, and saying, okay, this is what happens in the whole Gulf.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. The actual information they used to do the red snapper laws were, the way they gather their information on the red snapper population in the entire Gulf of Mexico is in a small section, and they use trawls. They use like a shrimp trawl, and they run these nets, and if they catch red snapper in these nets, you know, they count them, and then they use a mathematical formula, supposedly, that will show them how many are actually in the Gulf. But correct me if I'm wrong, and in all my experience, red snapper hang out around rocky structures, usually with a lot of relief on it.
And if by relief, you mean these are tall, rocky structures.
They stick up off the bottom. And if you pull a trawl over one of those, you're going to lose your trawl. So therefore, all these information gatherers for the National Marine Fisheries Council are out there trawling around on soft bottom and looking for red snapper.
So in other words, they go trawling over open, they take out a boat with a net behind it and drag it across sandy open bottom and say, well, there's no fish here.
The red snapper must be endangered because, you know, we're not catching a lot of them.
Now, is that the way they do on most of it? Because, you know, I'll be quite honest. I had no idea how they were doing it. I know I read the reports, and I've looked to try and find how they get this information, and there's no, you know, nobody will tell you.
I actually watched this, and it's available on YouTube. It's before Congress, and one of the congressmen from Mississippi and another from Alabama are questioning this this
technique.
Guy from,
it's
yeah, from the National
technique.
Marine Fisheries Council. And, you know,
I would have thought, like, they send a diver down on 10 reefs, and the diver goes, okay, let's say there's 24 here, go to the next reef, okay, there's one, go to the next reef, okay, it looks like there's several hundred.
Well, see, if they did that, then they would have so many snapper counted that they, you know, they would run out of paper to write it on, and, you know, they wouldn't have anything to protect. So basically these laws that are being enforced now with all these closures, you know, not snook, obviously snook are an inshore fish, and there are a finite number of them in our state. But
and they use electric shock for those.
Correct.
They go out and they run that wands through the water, producing electric shock, which has like a much less effect. But you know, you've seen on Crocodile Dundee where he throws the dynamite in the water and the fish all float to the top. Mm-hmm. Well, they do the same thing with electricity. They go along and they zap an area, and the fish come up and they count them.
Yep. And unfortunately, there's no way for them to actually tell how many grouper are in the Gulf of Mexico, snapper, trigger fish, any of these things. They're guessing, and they're guessing on the side that benefits them, because if there's nothing to protect, somebody's out of a job.
Well, that's been my problem with, basically, it started a couple administrations ago, speak-ins in Washington, D.C.
Jimmy Carter started it.
Yeah. What happened was, I mean, this is several administrations, I should say it that way, that if you go to the government and you go to your boss and you say, hey, everything's good right now. I looked at everything, and everything's in its place, and everything's working fine. And I don't see any dramatic problems at this point. And they say, okay, well, thank you very much. And they say, well, when do you want me to do my next study? Oh, well, we don't, everything's fine. You don't need to have it. We don't need any more studies. It's all good. But if you go to them and you say, everything looks pretty good, except we've got a major incident. This is a major critical. This is an environmental crisis about to happen here to the trigger fish that live underneath a red rock pointed up by a old piece of concrete. And every trigger fish that lives in that exact situation is going to become extinct. We have got to work on this. Mm-hmm. And the more you can blow this up, the bigger the problem is.
And the more money's thrown
at it. And the more money you can get. And the whole while, they know it's garbage. The feds don't know anything about anything. So they just, okay, yeah, well, I need to acquisition, you know, $50,000 for this study. We need a $20,000 administration fee for that. Mm-hmm. We need permitting to do that. So the guy asking for the money gets $50,000, and the government agency gets between $50,000 and $150,000 for overseeing the study.
That's correct. And not only that, but then when the National Marine Fisheries Council was created, you have a bunch of appointed officials, government officials, appointed, not elected.
I actually applied for that one time.
So there, well, yeah, but you know too much to actually be on that,
yeah,
that board.
You know, it was a long shot, but I said, "What the heck? I'll send in an application." I thought about putting on there that, you know, I'm part of the, you know, marine mammal protection, and
Greenpeace,
I'm this, and
yeah.
You know, and I just thought maybe, you know, if I just put it as far out that way, maybe I'd have a shot of getting on. I think somebody figured out I was lying.
Well, yeah.
But I'm not lying. I worked for Marine Mammal Protection for over 10 years. And unbelievably proud of the work I did, because I think these idiots who protest and say horrible things and at somebody who they want them to do something different. They're protesting because they believe this is a horrible thing and a horrible idea. So they stand there and they cuss at people and they violently do stuff and all that, and then wonder why the person does not do what they want them to do. I'm sorry, if you come up to me and say, listen, you know, I would really like this and this, and this is why, and this is why, and I'm very apt to look at you and go, man, I got to look into that. That sounds reasonable. You come up and cuss at me and tell me, you know, what a horrible person I am and how bad I am.
Because you don't think the way that we want you to think.
Well, I got to tell you, you're not getting my endorsement.
Yeah. Or because, vote, endorsement, or anything.
And when I went to the Marine Mammal Protection, who I was vehemently against, I went in there and asked, you know, how are you doing it? What's going on? I was hired by them as a guide to go around and do the stuff. And I found out I didn't like at all what they were doing. But instead of complaining about it, I was able to get myself in a position to change it. I was actually suspended without pay for a week because they had to do a review on my work. Because the first job I was superintendent on, I did 107 changes on a 115-point project. And they shut down everything. They came down and did a review. And the guy who actually got me into this position was awarded Environmentalist of the Year awards and Nature awards, and he was the I forget the exact title that he got, but he got this magnificent title because of all the wonderful changes we had done to the federal plan. That's how you get stuff done. You get involved and you do good work. You do you think clearly. You work hard, and that's how everything changes. But you know. Then again, but going back to what we say, somebody's got to give you a chance. Mm-hmm. I'm not trying to blow my own horn here. I guess I am a little bit. Was that a humble brag, they say?
That was a little humble brag, but that's fine.
I didn't.
It's not bragging if you did it.
I actually did it, so I was very proud of what I did. But it just goes to the point that it's the same thing when I go to the government now and do my protests and stuff. I try to be as informative, rational as I can, which is hard for me because I'm not that way by nature. So, you know, you play guitar with me, we fish together, you know, I have a bad habit of falling off the handle. So, anyway, but I mean well.
That's the point.
Okay.
And not only that, if you don't like the red snapper laws, the grouper laws, if you understand the fact that, you know, this is a government entity that is actually protecting its own butt and not protecting the fish that they're supposed to be protecting, and they're also servicing the commercial fishing industry, because most of the people that are appointed to this council are directly
commercial fishermen.
They're directly tied to
or
the
their
commercial
families
fishing
are industry. In commercial fishing.
So if you don't like that situation, you can complain about it all you want to, and nobody's going to listen to your complaints unless you put it in writing and send it to a congressman, a senator. You can send it.
When you complain about the way they do the sampling, that
use
we're requiring
facts.
Better sampling techniques. Do not say, well, you know, these people are jerks, and, you know, don't spout vicious names and don't swear. Reasonable, logical points, and say, we're questioning their sampling. We're questioning the motivation behind it. We want to know why a $19 billion a year recreational fishing industry is being put in second place to a $3 billion a year commercial fishing industry. And who does the sampling? Where does this come from? I have argued myself for just a simple website that people could log into, and you would have a range where you 5 to 10 miles out and show a map of Florida and say, okay, zone A, B, C, D, whatever. And then were you, you know, 1 to 5 miles out? Were you 5 to 20 miles out? Were you 20 miles plus out? And what type of fish did you catch?
Mm-hmm.
It would be very, very simple. And that way people could get a very good idea of what's going on. Because everybody's got a smartphone nowadays. it wouldn't take long with a phone app that when people on their way back in, they get to the dock and you just say, okay, guys. But the big problem with this is that would be evidence to be used against us.
That's correct.
So we cannot even ask for better sampling because they say, okay, you guys took too many fish.
Well, I can tell you that I don't believe that the federal government has taken ownership of the fish in the Gulf of Mexico or the oceans for that fact. Do you realize that if you're participating in a tournament where you could possibly weigh a tuna in, even in the Bahamas, that you have to possess a tuna permit issued by the United States of America?
In the Bahamas?
In the Bahamas. You have to have a tuna permit.
Really?
That is the way they do it over there. If you're participating in their tournament and you don't have a tuna permit, you cannot weigh a tuna.
All right. So is there anything we can actually call them or write to them and say?
Absolutely.
What would your suggestion be? Because I thought about everything we should write and everything I want to do. And
well,
to me,
I understand
under the current
that the
phrase, I think they would just use it as evidence against us.
I think that there's probably going to be a few changes in Washington, D.C. coming up. And really?
Has there been any changes? I haven't noticed any.
Rumor has it that there is a new sheriff in town.
That there is going to be a change in administration or something?
Well, there has been. And
I did hear there was an election. Okay.
Yeah.
Sorry. I mean, but hopefully things will balance out. Now,
so you write those letters, call your representatives, and, you know, it wouldn't hurt to write letters and correspond, emails, you know, all the way up to the office of the president. You know, let them know what's going on. You know, these people are going to fight it tooth and nail that have been appointed by government officials. But they can be taken out of there, but the only way they can be taken out of there is by an act of Congress.
Well, you know, and the other thing is, there's a few of the congressmen that fish. There's a few. There's some pretty cool ones. And I will say, when George Bush was in office, not because he was a Republican or a Democrat, but he would come here and fish all the time.
He likes to fish. He comes out to the boat all the time.
They come to Southwest Florida to go fishing, which made him a much better advocate for sportsmen and outdoorsmen. And I don't know, and this is a point to be fair, I honestly don't know if any Obama's friends or family were hunter or fishermen. I really don't know. I don't know if Michelle's family or Obama's, if any of them were actually involved in outdoor sports or not.
I don't think so.
I mean, I'm not sure, and I'm not saying it in a good way or bad way. I'm saying I literally don't know, which I guess would suggest no. And that might be why he was so much on the side of the commercial industry and the anti, you know, the save the eco-nut side of it.
Mm-hmm.
Because if your family's not involved in it or you're not involved in it, you don't understand the benefits and or detriments of the sport.
If you don't have a dog in the fight, it doesn't bother you.
Right.
Now, either way.
I will say I understand Trump does not hunt or fish, but both his sons are big hunting and fishing.
There you go.
Now, hopefully that helps. I don't know if it will or not. You know?
Maybe just a different attitude toward how things should be done could help.
And I think we've at least got a little bit of hope there. Whether you love Trump or hate Trump, the one thing about it is if his family hunts or fishes, and we know one of them, I think it's the older one, is the big hunter fisherman.
Well, you know, it's not really a love-hate thing. You know, whoever's president of the United States, you know, as an American, a citizen of the United States, you know, I want our country to do good.
I'm just worried about the fishing and hunting aspect of it.
And
I should be more engaged in, are we going to do this with Russia or Mexico
Whoever's in there,
I just want to know, are we going to get a fair shot? Are the fishing and hunting people going to get a fair shot?
Well,
I hope so.
We've been buffaloed through this whole protection process. It started with Jewfish, Goliath grouper.
That
was the biggest fiasco, and you know, if you can go back and find inter-office correspondence which correlated with the manatee having a paddle tail and the Goliath grouper having a paddle tail. And, you know, they can be...
Okay. I couldn't have put that together with super glue.
Well, it's there, and I've actually read it.
And I believe you because they're both paddle-tailed. But I wouldn't have put that together with super glue and a box of instructions.
Well, it's mysterious, you know, how these manatees, you know, were deemed Florida manatees when they're really West Indian manatees, and they travel freely, you know, across the Caribbean and the Gulf of Mexico.
Oh, yeah. The manatees that are in Florida, if left alone, person in Southwest Florida pays for Florida Power and Light to... It comes in, it's in your electric bill. Mm-hmm. If you live in Southwest Florida, you are paying in your electric bill for first the cost of the world's largest hot water heater.
That's right.
And the cost of maintaining the hot water heater, the natural gas. People are all upset environmentally. You know, we shouldn't be putting emissions out. Why do we burn to artificially heat the water on the Coosatchee River, so the manatees will stay there?
Same in Tampa Bay, Ancloke Key, all of these areas, even on the East Coast, in Port of Everglades and everything. Any place you have a warm water discharge, we are artificially keeping manatees from migrating south.
But there was a reason for the warm water discharge. When that was a fuel oil plant,
correct,
or coal plants, they have what's called a cooling tower.
Right.
And the water passes through that. Because it's all, most electricity is generated off of steam. Believe it or not, we use steam. That's how we generate electricity. If it's a nuclear power plant, it is generating steam.
Correct.
Most of our electricity is generated by steam blowing through a tube and spinning paddle wheels.
That's right. Just spinning a turbine.
It's basically like the old pioneers where they'd get in a stream and they'd put a wheel so that the water would take it down. It's the same basic principle. That's how we generate electricity. But what had to happen was they needed a cooling tower for these steam pipes in order to return the water, you know, make the water back into water, go from steam to back into water, boil it again, make it steam, turn it back into water. Those cooling plants artificially warm the waters around all the power plants. When they went to natural gas and some other things, when more or less when the plants were upgraded, cooling towers were obsolete. It was not a necessary part of what happened because they found that artificially heating the water in lakes, rivers, was very bad for the environment.
Absolutely.
It was horrific. So what did the Save the Manatee people do? They made FPL and these other companies who finally got rid of this environmental disaster of heating the water, they made them put in water heaters so that the water would stay warm.
For the manatees, to keep them here.
So that you could go and look at the manatees so they could raise more money. Because in the winter, the manatees are supposed to go to Cuba or the Virgin Islands, mm-hmm, or wherever manatees, maybe the Keys. You know, Keys are a great spot. You don't need to go all the way down
to
British Isles.
Or a Crystal River or something like that where there's natural springs. You know, that they naturally go to those kind of places. You know, so they'll be up in Wickiwatchee, they'll be in Crystal River.
But they migrated. As the water warmed up, they would move north all the way up through wherever. And then as the water gets colder, they migrate south.
To the south.
And they would travel thousands of miles. Now they put them in one area. They eat 50 to 75 pounds of grass a day.
Mm-hmm.
Now, what happens after you have a big meal, boys and girls?
Absolutely.
Nature does take its course. What goes in does come out. So now you've got hundreds of manatees in a small, confined area. And what goes in does come out.
And the water is not good.
This is not pleasant, boys and girls. This is not a good thing for the manatees. I don't know how we get this far away from everything, but the whole thing about it is we need to turn those thermostats down 1 degree every season. And so that water gets a little cooler every year. If you turn it off, they'll all die.
Mm-hmm.
That's not right. But 1 degree a year. And all of a sudden, it will just start getting uncomfortable, and they'll get the idea. Okay. And
they'll leave.
We got to go south. This is getting cold. I think I'm heading south. And we won't have to pay for heating the water. The hot water does not hurt the environment. Nothing about this is good. And having outside of, let's say, manatee poo is good fertilizer for seagrass. Other than that.
Well, it looks to me like the Caloosahatchee's got enough fertilizer in it already from the Okeechobee dumps, which is a whole nother story. But
well, everything goes everywhere. Now, to me, I don't understand. The Everglades are in such bad shape. Just dig a ditch south. It's a ditch, boys and girls. And if you want more water in the Everglades, you dig a ditch south. You let the water run there. You can control how much water goes in and out of there. And you just open it up, let it flow. All the canals will keep it drained. The only question you have is, can we keep enough water in the Everglades to allow the animals to come back? Because nothing lives in the glades. It's a horrible place. Gators live on, now they can live on pythons. Mm-hmm. And weird, you know, reptiles. They're actually getting some stuff back because so many exotic animals are moving in there. The gators now have something to eat. They were living on snails. Literally, the scientists were looking into their bellies and finding out gators were eating snails to stay alive. That's a sad thing for mm-hmm. the whole thing. But anyway, if you need a little more water in the glades, you do not fill in the canals. You do not build a bridge from Fort Myers to Miami. You simply put a berm up around the existing canals. The existing canals did exactly what they were supposed to do. They wanted to drain the glades.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you did it, and the glades died. But you don't fill them in and start over again. We know what works. You come back a little ways from the outside of the canal edges. You build a berm up. And let's say it's a 10-inch berm or a 12-inch berm. That holds 10, 12 inches of water behind that. As soon as it gets up, it goes into the canals, and it goes away. This would cost hundreds of thousands, maybe a million or two, to do this properly. They're talking about a multi-billion-dollar operation to fill in all these canals, put all this back, and then build what would essentially be a bridge, a concrete bridge from Fort Myers to Miami.
Mm-hmm.
Are they out of their frickin' minds?
Sure they are.
I could fix the whole thing with, you know, and to make a good profit, I'd want, you know, a few million dollars. But, you know, a couple of crews, some survey stuff, and dig a ditch south from Okeechobee. It's a ditch. It's not...
They've already destroyed the natural flow of the water anyway, so...
But it's supposed to have the water. The water was supposed to go from Okeechobee down through the glade.
Sure.
Put up the dam so people wouldn't die. People forget, big hurricane. A lot of people died. Hundreds or thousands of people died.
Thousands.
So all these people died. They did what people were supposed to. They tried to prevent it. Okay, it worked. Nobody's dying. But now we got to put the water back in the glades where it belongs.
Mm-hmm.
Just dig a ditch. I'm sorry. You know, humans have been able to do that for probably, I would say, 10,000 years. So, mm-hmm. you know, what are you going to do?
And politicians have made a mint off of it. So.
It boils down to a couple of berms, which is, by the way, just a mound of dirt, just a line of dirt around a canal and a ditch. That's and cool. You fix the Everglades.
I think that would be just fine.
Yeah, unfortunately, you know what? I actually presented this to a room full of feds one time, and they all got excited. They were all, you know, they were like, wow, that would work. Most of the material's right there. It would solve the problem for as far as the water retention in the glades. Mm-hmm. We could, you know, control how much water's there, what would drain off. The canals are working. We don't have to do much. It would be very inexpensive. We could divert the water flow down. And this whole excitement level lasted about 10 or 15 minutes, and I was really excited. And then they all looked at each other and said, I'll never go. And I'm like, what do you mean? I mean, I just explained it to you. And they said, no, it's too easy, and it doesn't cost enough. The government will never go for it.
There you go.
So, anyway.
Let's talk fishing.
All right, what we're going to do is we're going to opt this out as Frank and Morris rant and bring it back, and then bring back a regular fishing report. So... This is Fish and Frank Cap Morris, and the opinions expressed on this show are, I don't know, they could be ours, they could be somebody else's. I'm going to probably blame foreign intervention on the opinions that you've heard. This show was...
Dadgum Russians.
I mean, I was literally thinking Kurtzmenistan. I was believing the people of Kurtzmenistan were directly involved in the content of the, influencing
do we
the
call
content
those,
of this show.
Do we call them Kurtz?
All right. Well, we're ending this segment. We're going to come back with a Fisher Report. But we got to regroup. Okay, boys and girls, thanks for listening. We'll catch you on a real radio fishing very soon.